You're listening to a podcast from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners. I'm Kim Curry, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal. And welcome to Here's the Issue, featuring our November 2021 issue of the Journal. Well, this month and the next 4 months, I'm excited to tell you that we're going to be publishing some additional articles in our journal. We have some space given to us so that we can expand our page count, and you'll see lots and lots of great things in the journal for the next 5 months. And that's going to be a super thing to get that much science out there for everybody. And so as you can imagine, it's difficult to cover all that in the scope of one podcast. So what I thought I'd do this month, and I'll vary it a little bit from month to month, is we're going to feature our quantitative research studies that are being published in the month of November. And I want to kick it off with a study by Derby, West, Kelsey, Gossard, Satil, and Schanefeld. And this is a study titled A National Study of Personal Accomplishment, Burnout, and Satisfaction with Work-Life Integration Among Advanced Practice Nurses Relative to Other Workers. Here's the abstract. Background. There's a high prevalence of burnout among healthcare professionals, but little remains known about burnout and satisfaction with work-life integration among advanced practice nurses. The purpose was to evaluate burnout and satisfaction with work-life integration among advanced practice nurses compared with other U.S. workers. The methods were a national sample of advanced practice nurses and a probability-based sample of U.S. workers completed a survey that measured burnout and satisfaction with work-life integration. Results. Of the 976 advanced practice nurses who completed the survey, 64% noted high personal accomplishment, over 36% had symptoms of overall burnout, and over 60% were satisfied with their work-life integration. In multivariable analysis, several factors were independently associated with having higher odds of burnout. Work hours were also independently associated with lower odds of satisfaction with work-life integration. Advanced practice nurses were not more likely to have burnout or have greater struggles with work-life integration than other workers. Implications for practice. Findings from this study suggest advanced practice nurses have high levels of personal accomplishment and a favorable occupational health profile. Advanced practice nurses do not appear at higher risk of burnout or dissatisfaction with work-life integration than other U.S. workers. Our next study is by Hamilton, Merrill, Luthi, and Nuttall. It's entitled Knowledge, Attitudes, and Perceptions of Nurse Practitioners About Antibiotic Stewardship. Here's the abstract. Background. Antibiotic stewardship, or ABS, is a set of strategies to optimize antimicrobial use while reducing antibiotic resistance, improving patient outcomes, and decreasing unnecessary costs. Nurse practitioners play an essential role in healthcare education and represent a valuable potential resource for ABS efforts. The purpose of this study was to describe the knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions of NPs toward antibiotic stewardship. Methods. A convenient sample of nurse practitioners attending the AANP annual conference was given a modified descriptive survey. Descriptive statistics were used to assess normality. Results. A total of 194 NPs completed the questionnaire. Factors affecting the decision of antibiotic prescriptions included patient condition and patient cost. Nurse practitioners based their antibiotic decisions on the antibiogram in their setting, whereas some indicated they start with broad-spectrum and tailor antibiotic choices after cultures are received. Nurse practitioners understood that inappropriate antibiotic use causes resistance, harms the patient, and optimum antibiotic use will reduce resistance. Participants also recognized that strong knowledge of antibiotics was important and felt confident in using antibiotics. However, 94% agreed that antibiotics are overused nationally, and only 62% thought antibiotics were overused in their setting. Implications for practice. Nurse practitioners recognize that knowledge about antibiotics is important to their career and would like more education about antibiotics and feedback about their antibiotic choices. Finding effective ways to provide this education could change practice and improve antibiotic use. Our next study is a really interesting one. This is an international study from Slovakia, where the advanced practice nursing role is very new. The study is by Halaz, Majernikova, Abraknikova, Hudakova, and Vojtekova, and it's titled Developing the Advanced Practice Nursing Role in Slovakia, Perception, Education, and Practice. I'd like to introduce this to you by reading a short excerpt from this article that gives the history of the advanced practice nursing role in Slovakia. So I'm going to read you a few sentences about that. In Slovakia, advanced practice nursing was legislatively defined in 2018, and it stated in the Ministry of Health of the Slovak Republic that it is a nurse who graduated from at least the second university degree, meaning a master's degree, preceded by the first university degree, bachelor's, in nursing, with specialization and at least 5 years experience in a particular specialization, or a nurse without specialization but with 8 years of professional experience. So as you can tell, their advanced practice nursing role in the country is very, very new. So here's the abstract of their study. Background. Advanced practice nursing is a modern and effective nursing role that has a positive impact on healthcare systems around the world. Guiding principles are advanced education, expanded scope of practice, and policies supportive of the role. The aim of this study was to find out the perceptions of advanced practice nurses of their own practice in the context of the current legislative conditions in Slovakia and to identify related factors. Methods. A quantitative exploratory design was selected. There were 584 APNs that responded out of 5,000. It was a convenient sample. The adapted and modified SCAPE study questionnaire was used for data collection. Data were processed using SPSS-25. Results. There were differences between newly introduced competencies for the advanced practice nursing role in Slovakia and the general concept of the role that could influence practice. The level of advanced practice nurses' perception of their own practice is pretty low. Years of practice was significantly and positively related to their perceptions. The results in each region were significantly different. Community nurses, outpatient nurses, those assessed their practice at a significantly higher level. The educational curriculum lacks the subject of advanced practice nursing to a large extent. Competencies, remuneration, and satisfaction with the status are insufficient at present. Implications for practice. To understand, implement, and practice the concept of advanced practice nursing, it's essential to change policies related to competencies, education, remuneration, and status. Creation of an educational model that includes the subject of advanced practice nursing at postgraduate curricular level is essential. The condition should also be unified within all regions. Our next study is by Harris, Williams, and Duke. It's titled, The Millennial Engagement, Resiliency, and Retention Study. What does your millennial advanced practice registered nurse workforce really want? Here's the abstract. Background. Increasing the use of advanced practice nurses may be one of the most viable options to meeting the burgeoning healthcare demands of older Americans and impending provider shortages over the next two decades. However, keeping the millennial workforce engaged and retained continues to be a significant challenge for healthcare administrators. The purpose of this study was to understand the intergenerational advanced practice registered nurse workforce and assess what job satisfaction factors impact APRN intention to stay, and explore how variables such as resiliency, style, and age affect retention in these young careerists. Methods. This was a single-center, cross-sectional descriptive study using survey methodology. A total of 405 APRNs from all specialties and practice sites from a large Midwestern academic medical center were eligible to participate. A total of 165 APRNs completed the survey for a 41% response rate. Results. There were no significant differences in mean resiliency scores by age cohort or a higher intention to leave in millennial-aged APRNs versus older APRNs. However, there were significant mean differences in job satisfaction responses that warrant consideration in millennial versus older baby boomer APRNs on items such as professional growth, compensation, monetary bonuses, and expanding procedures and skills within scope of practice. Implications for practice. Understanding generational differences in APRN job satisfaction assists hospital leaders to develop strategies to support, engage, and retain younger careerists, which may help mitigate turnover. Our next study concerns the dynamics between nurse practitioners and physicians. It's by Blackwell and Faraci, and it's titled Conflict Resolution Between Physicians and Nurse Practitioners. Here's the abstract. Background. In the United States healthcare system, nurse practitioners and physicians work very closely in the delivery of high-quality patient care across lifespans and acuities. In fact, advanced practice nurses work closer with physicians in their day-to-day care delivery than with any other group of professionals. This remains true even in states with independent practice for NPs. Because of the significant relationships between physicians and NPs, assessment of how these professionals resolve conflict is essential. The purpose of this study was to determine the style of conflict resolution employed by nurse practitioners and physicians. Methods. 57 nurse practitioners and 58 physicians were randomly sampled from the Florida Department of Health Healthcare Practitioner Data Portal. Participants completed a demographic questionnaire assessing experience in conflict resolution training and the RAHIM Organizational Conflict Inventory 2, Form C, which defined the style of conflict resolution they most used and preferred. Results showed that 29.8% of physicians and 40.4% of NPs received formal conflict resolution and management education or training. The dominant style of conflict resolution used for 78% of physicians and 74% of nurse practitioners was the integrating style, with no statistical difference between the two professionals. Implications for practice. Physicians and nurse practitioners lack formal education on conflict resolution in their graduate studies. In addition, both professionals tend to use similar styles of conflict resolution among one another in clinical practice, which affects their collaboration and ultimately how optimal care is delivered to patients. Next, we have a study designed to establish reference values on a neonatal eating scale. This study is by Pados, Johnson, and Nelson, and it's titled Neonatal Eating Assessment Tool, Mixed Breastfeeding and Bottle Feeding, Reference Values and Factors Associated with Problematic Feeding Symptoms in Healthy Full-Term Infants. Here's the abstract. Background. The Neonatal Eating Assessment Tool, or NeoEAT, Mixed Breastfeeding and Bottle Feeding Scale, is a parent report assessment of symptoms of problematic feeding in infants who are feeding by both breast and bottle. The purpose was to establish reference values for the NeoEAT mixed feeding tool and evaluate factors that contribute to symptoms of problematic feeding in healthy full-term infants. Methods. Parents of 409 infants less than 7 months old completed an online survey. Median and percentile scores were presented for infants ages 0 to 2 months, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, and 6 to 7 months old. Results. The NeoEAT tool mixed feeding total score and scores for the gastrointestinal tract function and energy and physiologic stability subscales decreased with increasing infant age. Infant regulation and feeding flexibility subscale scores remained stable over time, whereas sensory responsiveness subscale scores increased with increasing infant age. Infants with more gastrointestinal symptoms had higher NeoEAT mixed feeding total scores. Implications for practice. The reported reference values may be used to identify infants in need of further assessment, referral, and intervention. In healthy, full-term infants with concurrent gastrointestinal symptoms and problematic feeding, interventions targeted at gastrointestinal symptoms may help to improve symptoms of problematic feeding as well. Our next study is by Angosta, Reyes, Cross, Pollum, and Sood. It's titled Cardiovascular Disease Knowledge, Risk Factors, and Resilience Among U.S. Veterans with and Without Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Here's the abstract. Background. Cardiovascular disease, or CVD, is the leading cause of death in the United States and the leading cause of hospitalization and disability among U.S. veterans. Information about CVD knowledge and risk factors and connection between psychological health and CVD among veterans transitioning from the military are limited. Purpose. We examined the existing knowledge of CVD and its risk factors among U.S. veterans with and without post-traumatic stress disorder and the relationship between knowledge, risk factors, resilience, and PTSD. Methods. A total of 104 veterans participated in the study by responding to the Primary Care PTSD Screen for Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition, Heart Disease Fact Questionnaire, or HDFQ, Knowledge Scale, and Connor Davidson Resilience Scale, 10. Data were extracted from the online Qualtrics survey software into SPSS version 25 for analysis. Results. The mean age was 52.3 years, 85.6% males, 72.1% married, 54.8% employed, and with a college education. Most were in the Navy or Air Force and served in a war. Hypertension, high cholesterol, and obesity were the most common CVD risk factors reported. Average CVD knowledge score was 85%. Marines scored higher on resilience than other branches of the military. 17% reported having PTSD. The Connor Davidson Resilience Scale 10 was significantly correlated with the Heart Disease Fact Questionnaire in the probable PTSD group. Implications for practice. The study provides information about the knowledge and risk factors of CVD among veterans and insights about interventions needed to improve cardiovascular health. Nurse practitioners should assess the cardiovascular and psychological health of veterans and screen for PTSD to provide appropriate care and referral. Next is a study that concerns drug selection in patients experiencing hemorrhagic stroke. It's by McDonald and Sirsopa, and it's titled Predictors of Hemorrhagic Stroke in Older Persons Taking Non-Steroidal Anti-Inflammatory Drugs, Results from the Food and Drug Administration Adverse Event Reporting System. Here's the abstract. Background: hemorrhagic strokes have not declined in the United States despite a decline worldwide. Purpose: to identify hemorrhagic stroke risk associated with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, other medications associated with increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke, and diabetes, cardiovascular disease, gender, and age. Methods: a post hoc design was used to examine predictors of hemorrhagic stroke for adults age 65 and older from the Food and Drug Administration Adverse Events Reporting System database. The initial sample consisted of all cases reported during the third quarter of 2016 and the second quarter of 2018, with an NSAID as the primary suspect for the adverse drug event. An additional 397 cases with warfarin as the primary suspect were included in the final sample for an N of 3,784. To test for bias from including only NSAID as the primary adverse drug event suspect cases. Extracted data included the primary adverse drug event, hemorrhagic stroke or other adverse drug event, the age, gender, primary suspect drug, NSAID or warfarin, and presence of a second NSAID, rivaroxaban, warfarin, clopidogrel, antidepressants such as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, and tricyclic antidepressants, inhaled corticosteroids, diabetes, or cardiovascular medications. Logistic regression was used to predict hemorrhagic stroke. Results: aspirin and warfarin increased the risk for hemorrhagic stroke by 3.458 and 3.059, respectively. Presence of an additional NSAID reduced the risk by 48%. Implications for practice. Hemorrhagic stroke risk, specific to older adults, may provide helpful estimates for practitioners as they weigh the risk-benefit of prescribing aspirin as an antiplatelet therapy for older adults. And our last feature in our quantitative research studies for November is by Rajan, Ackroyd, Ahmed, Ramsey, Ballantyne, Peterson, and Varani. It's titled Healthcare Costs Associated with Primary Care Physicians versus Nurse Practitioners and Physician Assistants. Here's the abstract. Background: significant primary care provider shortage exists in the United States. Expanding the scope of practice for nurse practitioners and physician assistants can help alleviate this shortage. The Department of Veterans Affairs has been a pioneer in expanding the role of NPs and PAs in primary caregiving. Purpose: this study evaluated the healthcare costs associated with VA patients cared for by NPs and PAs versus primary care physicians. Methods: a retrospective data analysis using two separate cohorts of VA patients, one with diabetes and the other with cardiovascular disease, was performed. The associations between PCP type and healthcare costs were analyzed using ordinary least square regressions with logarithmically transformed costs. Results: the analyses estimated 12% to 13% and 4% to 5% higher costs for patients assigned to physicians as compared with those assigned to NPs and PAs after adjusting for baseline patient sociodemographics and disease burden in the diabetes and cardiovascular disease cohort, respectively. Given the average patient population size of a VA medical center, these cost differences amount to a total difference of $14 million U.S. dollars per year per center and $5 million U.S. dollars per year per center for diabetic and cardiovascular disease patients, respectively. Implications for practice. This study highlights the potential cost savings associated with primary caregiving by NPs and PAs. In light of the PCP shortage, the study supports increased involvement of NPs and PAs in primary caregiving. Future studies examining the reasons for these cost differences by provider type are required to provide more scientific evidence for regulatory decision-making in this area. Thank you for this study. Great study, and I hope to see a lot more like it. I hope you've enjoyed these research abstracts. Thanks to all of our listeners, and be sure and look for more podcasts from the Journal of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners.